for the defense of the people on October 29th. More than 250,000 people have so far fled the ongoing violence, bringing the total number of displaced people in the province to at least 1.2 million and possibly higher. Most are now living in displaced camps in the narrow belt of land that is still under government control around Goma. Amnesty International's researcher on Democratic Republic of Congo, Andrew Phillips, said, "A human rights and humanitarian tragedy is underway in North Kivu province, but the UN Security Council, the European Union, and African Union are sitting on their hands. They have so far failed to give the UN peacekeeping force the reinforcements and equipment it needs to provide effective protection to civilians. Conditions in the camps are said to be disastrous. New camps, many without latrines, portable water, and shelters are still springing up. Some camps are within a few hundred meters of the front lines. Dozens of cases of cholera have begun to be reported. Humanitarian agencies are doing their utmost to bring aid to these displaced, but are close to being overwhelmed by the scale of the suffering. In the larger part of the province, in areas under armed group control or otherwise inaccessible to humanitarian aid, tens of thousands of displaced are unaccounted for and living without any organized assistance. The human rights situation is no less deadly. On the night of 5th and 6th November, after fierce fighting between the Congress for the Defense People Armed Group and pro-government Mai Mai Militia for control of the town Kiwanja, Congress for the Defense of People Fighters reportedly went from house to house searching for Mai Mai members they believed were hiding inside. Witnesses told Amnesty International that large numbers of men, residents of Kiwanja, who were mainly aged between 18 and 30, who were young fathers and newlyweds, were taken from their homes and deliberately killed by the Congress of National Democratic of People. I think I'm running out of time, so I'm just going to go to the bottom of what I want to say, which is that Amnesty International is urging the international community and you to make no more excuses, to reinforce the United Nations peacekeeping force right now, to create safe corridors for humanitarian aid throughout North Kivu in Democratic Congo, and put concerted international pressure on the fighting forces to halt all human rights abuses. And you could do this by, I guess first you have to learn about the issue, and what you could do is Google it or go to Amnesty website and learn what's going on and pressure the United Nations and UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and also our new president, Barack Obama, to take action on this. So for more information, visit amnestyusa.org. And now I'm going to turn the mic over to Mary Masterman.
Hello there. I'd just like to say first that you're listening to WMBR Cambridge and the Sferio program. And Jasmine's just been talking to us about the crisis that's happening right now in the Congo. And I think it's really important that everyone learn about this, because I feel like it's not being publicized at all, and it's horrible, and it's like, it might be as bad as the genocide in Rwanda was, but there's not any publicity about it. And now I have some announcements for you, and so our first announcement is that the Brazilian Immigrant Center will be having a two-day seminar on how to become a candidate for a political election this weekend, November 15th through 16th, at the University of Massachusetts, 100 Morrissey Road. The first session, entitled How to Organize a Campaign to Win, will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday in Wheatley Hall. For more information, call the Brazilian Immigrant Center at 617-703-0001.
Y en español, el Centro Inmigrante Brasileño estará teniendo un seminario de dos días en el que te enseñarán cómo ser un candidato en una elección política en ese fin de semana, mañana y pasado mañana, en la Universidad de Massachusetts, en el Morrissey Road número 100. La primera sesión será llamada Cómo Organizar una Campaña para Ganar. Y esto será a las 10 de la mañana, este sábado mañana, en el Wheatley Hall. Para más información, puede llamar al Centro de Inmigrante Brasileño en el 617-703-0001.
And this Saturday, November 15th, has been called as a National Day of Action in support of LGBT rights. At 1:30 p.m. on Saturday, there's going to be a stand-up for same-sex marriage rights at City Hall Plaza near the Government Center T-stop. You can join in pressuring the California government to overturn Proposition 8, which would ban same-sex marriage.
Y este sábado, o sea, mañana, noviembre 15, también es mi cumpleaños, será, es llamado el Día Nacional de Acción para el Apoyo de los Derechos para LGBT, que no lo voy a traducir ahorita, a la una y media de la tarde. Este sábado habrá un stand-up, que es como una demostración en favor de lo, del ¿cómo se dice? Marriage.
Bueno, del casamiento de los gays, ¿verdad? Y los las lesbianas.
Sí. Bien.
¿No? Sí. Sí, diría yo.
Esto para presionar al gobierno de California para que pase la proposición número 8 que ¿cómo se dice? Ban, que prohibió los casamientos de entre personas del mismo sexo.
And there will also be a speaker forum entitled The $700 billion Question, What's Going On With The Economy? By Suresh Naidu, this Sunday at 11 a.m. At the Community Church of Boston in Copley Square. He spent a lot of time organizing in radical activist communities, providing education about radical economics to help organizers and activists understand capitalism and some alternatives more completely.
También habrá un evento llamado La Pregunta de los $700 billones, ¿qué está pasando con nuestra economía? Por Suresh Naidu, este es domingo a las 11 de la mañana en la Community Church en Boston, en el Copley Square. Este es Suresh Naidu. Ha pasado mucho tiempo organizando en comunidades activistas radicales, también promoviendo la educación de economía radical y ayudando a organizadores y activistas a entender un poquito más el capitalismo y algunas alternativas que tenemos.
There will also be... Oh, okay. I guess that's all the time for announcements we have. I forgot what time it was. And I hope that you've had fun listening to our show.
I certainly hope you did too. And we have one last little moment for our guests to say bye.
Thank you very much for having us.
Gracias. Ciao.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we will catch you again next Friday at 7 as usual.
No,
and
at 6.
I'm at 6. Yeah. Oye, ¿qué fue que dije yo?
Bueno,
y una noticiacita más de Froilán.
Un shout-out para mis amigos allá en Bexley 412, lo que me están escuchando. Tal vez está la Malamo, tal vez está Fernando, no sé quién más, pero un shout-out para mis amigos que están escuchando. ¡Órale!
Bien, ok. Stay tuned for Music for Human Beings right after this. This is WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM.
مرحبا من الدكتور جالس السكران. You are listening to Music for Human. And tonight I have with me الأستاذ Paul.
Hello.
Welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Doctor. I'm glad to be on the show again.
Yeah, it's been several weeks since we last had you. I hope you are in good health. I am.
And I have been away from this area for a little while.
You were traveling.
That's right.
Journeying.
Both physically and spiritually.
That's really excellent.
Yes.
Yeah, it's good to take the time to do those sorts of journeys.
Yes.
From time to time. Was there anything noteworthy in the spiritual realm?
Well, I noticed that some people think flying, getting on a plane, is a necessary evil. It's a waste of time. But I noticed that when I'm on the plane, I can actually focus. I can block things out and explore the spiritual realm at a deeper level than when I'm on the ground and constantly bombarded by annoyances, disturbances, interruptions. On the plane, after the announcements, of course, after when the flight attendant tells you how to buckle your seatbelt and displays the process of putting on a life jacket, you really have the time to yourself. You have, unless, of course, the person next to you is really wants to talk, and that has its benefits on its own too. But you have time to explore yourself, to reflect.
Yeah, it's really a good moment.
Yes.
Where there are relatively few disturbances.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, somehow there is less freedom there.
Oh, yes.
Right? And that also contributes to your ability to explore yourself.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's less physical freedom in the sense of leg room. With, sometimes there are some cost cuts and they're trying to increase revenue. The leg room is reduced.
Really? I mean, it sounds like a little bit too much attention to the material world there.
Right.
But, this enables more people to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And for the entire process to be slightly cheaper.
Yes, which is good for a lot of people. It allows us to branch out. Cheaper plane tickets actually is good for all parts of the economy and all parts of, even for people who are exploring themselves. It allows them to branch out.
Yeah, I personally don't like to explore myself on a plane because I've had some bad experiences.
Well, I mean, you have to be careful, of course. Of course, yeah.
Well, I'll give you an example. 2 or 3 years ago, I was flying, it was an international flight. I was flying from Finland back here to Boston, which is where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And the flight from Finland is very long. Like, it really strikes me as interminable.
Yeah, it might be the way the map is drawn. Sometimes people underestimate or overestimate the length of flights because of the distorted way our geography is presented to us.
Yeah, and so I found myself, of course, I was seated. I may say without pride that I am a fairly large individual. So I usually reserve 2 seats on a plane for my comfort and the comfort of those around me.
That's very generous of you.
Well, it's really for my own sake. as well as for the others. But I found myself on this particular flight, I was unable to get two seats adjacent to each other. So I had one seat in the front of the plane and one further back, which is useless, really. So there I was, and just sitting by myself, and occasionally, like, you know, this is not too unusual that this occurs, but none of the Finnish people, either they were unwilling or they could not understand my ranting. I don't speak Finnish, and they refused to exchange seats with me.
That's really unfortunate.
So I was left squeezed into this tiny area for many hours. And there was this portly gentleman to my left who was breathing heavily through his mouth, mm-hmm. and noisily. And there was this this middle-aged woman to my right who was noisily chewing this, you know, chewing gum.
I see.
And so I was extremely uncomfortable. So I returned to a scene of calm within myself so that I might, you know, find some patience and fortitude for the remainder of the flight.
Where did you go in this? How did you find this scene of calm?
Yeah, so generally when I'm in a situation like I'm waiting in line or I'm in a public restroom, I will focus on this moment from my childhood where I first reached the top of a sand dune and looked at the vast expanse of beige, sort of, it strikes you like a river, that this sand expanding towards the horizon. And I returned to this moment and I can always be, you know, become calm there. And
wow.
I remember a falcon swooping down, and I mean, it was very calm, very peaceful, quiet moment in my...
You know, this is not the first time I've heard someone mention the color beige, because in my childhood, the ceiling fan was beige in my room, and the ceiling fan, of course, was associated with coolness and calmness. In my childhood, and I also reflect on that color when I want to
become calm,
yeah, escape the physical constraints around me, yeah, especially when the leg room is especially small. I think about the color beige.
So unfortunately, I was sitting there trying to focus on this image, but my anger with the plane and, like, all of the, you know, the gentleman to my left, the woman to my right, and the many Finnish people who refused to exchange seats with me, I found that I was imagining a scene of destruction, that I focused on my image of the desert, and I found myself rising, and I could see more and more of the world as I rose, and suddenly I was above the earth and I could see the entire blue expanse beneath me. And then far to the north I could see a plane flying from Finland to Boston, and there I was inside, very uncomfortable. So then I became an asteroid and rushed headlong into the planet. And well, as I've said before, I'm a rather large gentleman, so the entire Earth was destroyed in the raging fires.
Wow.
Yeah, and very unfortunate, very, you know, I began screaming in Arabic, ahead of, you know, very scary for all of the people around who were Finnish and who barely spoke English. let alone Arabic. So,
yeah, I mean that's really extraordinary to have not only a out of body experience here, right? Lifting yourself up through the atmosphere into space, looking down, but also having a trans celestial body experience, becoming a celestial body like an asteroid.
Thus was my anger, my rage, and my discomfort. And I watched with some pleasure as the oceans boiled away into space, and the snow sublimated, and those cocky Finnish people were reduced to ozone and other gases.
You must have been a very, very big asteroid.
I was, yeah. I did not have a ruler or laser rangefinder with me so that I could measure my girth, but I would estimate that I was basically the size of Kansas.
That's very big.
Well, I've never been to Kansas, but I'm told that the population is only slightly larger than Boston, but that the population density is so low that it's a rather large state.
Yeah. The problem with being an asteroid of that size, though, is that if you're that big headed towards Earth, I watched this on a documentary recently. It was called Armageddon.
Oh, so you actually were able to witness like an artistic rendering of me as an asteroid descending towards a plane full of Finnish people.
Well, there weren't Finnish people involved per se. There were mostly Americans and some French people, and also the people of Asia, Asiatic people.
Mm-hmm.
But
no Finnish people.
I don't remember any Finnish people. But otherwise, there was an asteroid crashing into the Earth, and in the documentary, they simulated a group of oil drillers who went and had to split the asteroid apart by changing it from within.
Yeah. Oh, so it was like a documentary about the human hope, the dream of what might be, you know, our possible destruction.
That's right. Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, I'm not sure that you want to give away the ending of the documentary, but can you tell us at least if any of the Asian people, for example, were saved?
From what I can tell, none of the Asian people were saved.
So no single Asian person survived. Excuse me. It's really tragic.
Yeah, it.
Because there are so many Asian people.
There are many. Yes. Yes, millions at least.
Well, yeah, I think it might be a good moment for us to put some whales on the air. Let's see if we can generate some whales here.
That's really delightful.
Yeah, truly. And look, we have our first caller of the evening. Marhaban, you are on the air.
Yes, I just like to talk about my experience with flying Air Finland.
Oh, please do so.
Well, it was I had a friend that had an experience similar to yours when I was on a spiritual journey, and he told me that the Finnish were kind of funny in their own special way, but one of the things he said was that more saunas than televisions in Finland. So they're quite used to being naked and sweating together as a culture. And the other thing was that when I purchased my two tickets, I made an altar on one of the chairs, and it was the same situation where they didn't let me have two seats together. So as I was boarding, I asked the steward if I could set up an altar to the Pixies. And Pixies are how the Finnish people relate to each other and to spirituality and to a higher consciousness. So I set up the altar, and in the flight, I just stood in the plane and I said, would anybody like to do a Pixie meditation or a Pixie chant with me?
And you,
and to my amazement, everybody on the plane became very friendly, and they turned up the heat on the plane a little bit, and everybody on that plane, including the pilot and the stewardesses, took off their clothes.
Ah, so like a Pixie airplane sauna.
It was a Pixie airplane sauna. It was very relaxing, and they let me sit next to my altar, and they all came out. And it took a lot of they say if you don't approach the finish correctly, they can be quite they keep to themselves and quite inhospitable to any other religions except Pixieism. Does that make any sense?
No, of course, yeah. It's my experience in Finland. Unfortunately, I was not aware of Pixieism, and so I did not visit any Pixie shrines. But the population is really very homogenous, and so it does not surprise me that they would be somewhat, I wouldn't want to say intolerant, but certainly questioning of an Arab man on a plane, screaming obscenities.
Well, it's cold there. It's cold there, and they have reindeers and that sort of thing. And I think that the Arab culture, it would take a while to blend and assimilate with the Pixie culture. But I think it would certainly be a good thing, because there's each culture has a lot to add to each other's spiritual journey.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's I can see that. I can see that there's of course there's differences in how the environment of Finland and where Arab people are more customly found or more used to, and that may contribute to misunderstandings or misinterpretations of the type that our good doctor had mentioned.
That's right. And, it's just a cultural and a linguistic thing. Part of the Pixie meditation was that the pilot said, oh, we're going to do the Pixie now. Oh, I see. And, of course, everybody took off their clothes. But,
Well, yeah, caller, so it's just as you say. It's like the gentleman was prepared to receive Pixieism because it was in his experience to receive it.
That's right. And I would have had absolutely no clue, because they were very, until I had to ask the stewardesses, would this be appropriate to do now? And she says, wait. And, I didn't know whether they were going to kick me off the plane or not. I had no clue of how celebratory their culture was. But when we started the meditation, the pilot actually gently rocked the plane back and forth in the air.
So this was after electronic devices could be permitted to be used, or was this right after takeoff, or after you gained altitude to maybe 30,000 feet or so?
This was right after we had coffee. You know, the first. Mm-hmm. What do they serve you first? I think it's a little snack kind of thing. They go down the aisle.
On Air Finland, I believe they serve schnitzel. So, one moment, caller and Poe. I'm pleased to report that our ordained light minister, Lester Woods, is joining us now. Welcome, Lester.
Good evening.
Fabulous.
Good evening. You know, actually, caller, that reminded me a little bit of some research I've been doing recently into spiritual batteries. You know, I was wondering if maybe there might have been some electromagnetic interference between the planes transmissions that were going on while they were in the air and your actual spiritual battery connections. You know, maybe there are some crossed wires. I'm not really sure what could have been that problem, because I haven't looked into high altitude spiritual battery problems, but at least on the ground here there's some really interesting lines of inquiry which maybe I can share later.
I would love to know about that, because I always get a rush on taking off, and it just feels like my chakras go boom, 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 and all of a sudden I'm high as a kite when we've leveled off. You know, I'm just this is lovely. Oh, this is nice.
Yeah, I will have to pop my ear chakras right when we reach that point.
Yes. Yes.
Like the ear chakras become clogged with some sort of earth chakra.
And the earth chakras are connected to the throat chakras, which, has to do with the way the Finnish, Finnish speak differently than we do.
Yeah.
Right, fair enough. I feel like maybe there's some sort of negative potential created between those two chakras. As soon as you're leaving off the earth with the plane, it's like when you wake up in the morning, you first roll out of bed, you know, your hair's standing up on ends and you don't really know why until you've just been scooting yourself across the carpet, and all of a sudden it's the doorknob that really jolts you awake when you get shocked.
That's right. I oftentimes when I'm not quite conscious, I have to scoot across the carpet.
Yeah, you just, and you know, wherever the candle might be in the carpet, you can just kind of circumambulate it.
I struggle sometimes in the dark, and I have to light a candle right there on the floor.
And yeah, that's a really dangerous proposition, to light a fire right next to the very flammable carpet.
I think there's a lot of dangers in spirituality that people don't realize. I mean,
absolutely, yeah.
You talk about, just as your experience expanded, that the whole planet blew up, and on a certain dimension, we've lost that Earth in one of the parallel dimensions. Of course, it will be transformed in another area, where, you know, the Finnish and the Arab and the airplane and everything come together.
Yeah, there is a lot of truth to that, and I think a lot of people, particularly the casual armchair New Age practitioner, may not realize the risks that the uninitiated might face when meditating. You know, you may find an image of yourself being dismembered, and if you are not properly grounded to face that image, you can be scarred permanently by it.
A lot of the people on the plane, when it got kind of scary and everybody started sweating, they said something in Swedish or in Finnish that meant hold hands. Let's everybody hold hands, and we held hands in a circle, and we connected, and they started chanting something like hickle pickle hickle pickle hickle. It was very fast. I didn't know that they spoke that fast, but it was it was you know, the hair on my head just stood up, you know, and the plane was just flying along, and the pilot was just rocking back and forth, you know, side to side. And I went into a very, you know, as soon as my fear passed, I went into a very transcendental state. And I don't have much memory of that, except I was just, I felt at one with the universe and just total love for everything.
Yeah. So I'm also aware that in Finland, unlike in America, for example, they consume alcohol in the sauna. Were they consuming alcohol in the plain pixie sauna?
Oh, yes. In the Air Finland I was at, when instead of masks dropping down to show you how the emergency oxygen.
Yeah, right, right.
They had IV drips of vodka.
Oh yeah, just you plug it in basically.
Well, most everybody just put the tube in their mouth, and it was quite jollifying, I suppose.
Oh, that's great.
Does that present any technical difficulties? I mean, the distribution of vodka on the plane, of course. There aren't very many bathrooms on a plane, though, right? Does that lead to, I know this is more about the physical realm, but just
sure.
Pragmatically, certain issues arising?
Well, I just took the emergency bag for throwing up in, and I very carefully used that because that's what everybody else on the plane was doing. They were bagging it up, but I mean it was wild. It was wild. I've never had a plane ride like that before, but it was just very. The Finnish culture is just very complex, and I don't even begin to understand what happened. I don't even know if I left a part of me somewhere else because the experience was so transcendental. I mean, all I can and most of the Finns gave their urine bag back to the stewardess who
really pride themselves on service, I understand. Good customer service.
Oh, I was totally, totally amazed at how well I was taken care of. And what a surprise that my spirit was taken care of. But I sensed that if I hadn't let, that there was so much power and so much spiritual power in that trip that if I hadn't been prepared for it, that I might have had an explosive situation myself, because it would just it was just easy for my chakras were sort of going side to side, and they were oscillating like a chain rippling, and it was almost horrifying at a certain point, you know, because this is the stuff that you sort of hope will happen to you spiritually, but here you are up in an airplane and it's going on. You know, you don't know whether it's the end of the world or not.
Yeah, that's fascinating. You know, actually, some of those symptomatic expressions that you were just telling us about remind me of those people who have actually sine wave spiritual batteries. I mean, it's kind of like you go to Walmart and you just grab whatever's on the shelf, and if you... You know, if you're born with a connection turned backwards, it just inverts itself. And sometimes you have these more reactive sensual expressions, you know, whether it's, whatever it might be.
Yeah, like I've known people that have in their cultures foot vibration rituals or... hopping or dancing rituals also, which I think is sort of, I think it's called founder syndrome, where the entire group somehow has a genetic predisposition for inverse chakra battery terminal setup and installation, and the result is fascinating.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, it's tragic when that sort of happens to... I mean, it's one thing for it to be, you know, everyone being a little bit darker or the arms being slightly larger than normal. But when it happens to something so fundamental and spiritual, it's really tragic.
Right. It's almost as though that spiritual cornerstone is maybe positioned on the northeast instead of just the north, right? It's a little slightly off target.
Yeah, but the consequences for the, you know, the member of the tribe who wishes to experience spiritual enlightenment is really crippling.
It's out of phase.
Some tribes will put a cut a lemon in half and put a lemon to create a battery kind of a flow from the chakras. Cut a lemon and put it right in the base of your spine and your coccyx. Right on the top of your hips, and then they'll take a more neutral or an alkaline plant like a half a watermelon and cut out most of the red part and use that as a hat, and that'll create energy flowing all up and down the chakras, and it's quite inexpensive too.
So what is this when you cut open the lemon, and do you squeeze the lemon too, or do you let it remain intact except for the cut?
I let it remain.
Okay.
I'm not sure how it's practiced. You know, sometimes maybe the lemon juice is dripped in certain places, but I myself just duct tape the lemon right to my hips.
See, duct tape, like, this is a very nice, again, combination of the New Age and the fruits of science. I once visited a tribe where, this was in Finland, where they used gradually enlarging lip plug for potatoes to achieve a similar effect. And, of course, it's a very painful, long-term procedure. But it was deeply ingrained in their culture because, again, this small group of Finnish tribesmen had all had this, I assume, spiritual inversion battery founder syndrome, genetic predisposition.
Yes.
And so they had to use this potato method to buffer their spirituality.
Yes, that's exactly, it sounds exactly right. That would fit all the known hypotheses.
But now duct tape, widely available, no lip plug necessity whatsoever.
Much less pain.
And
some people shave first, a little bit.
Yeah, it's really amazing looking at how these different technologies can be applied in the spiritual realm. You know, I remember when I was growing up in the late 70s, you would hear all this about the space program really advancing our lives, but I feel like now it's just the more common modern conveniences that are actually benefiting our spiritual... You know, it's none of this flashy space-age blanket. It's the duct tape of the world that helps our spiritual sense.
Really, Lester, I wonder if that's something to do with the... you know, the uses. So as our caller rightly points out, you can improve your own spiritual what might one call it, exposure by shaving your hips and duct taping lemons, but you know, the uses for rocket ships and missiles are even more profound. Like, suppose that you found a brother you wanted to connect with in Africa who was hungry, you know? You could shoot him a banana, but no one ever does this, you know? It's just like the poor use to which the space program has been taken.
Well, I think the reason is that you require solid fuel rockets to do this, and these are just not available to most people. They're not as accessible.
Practitioner.
Right.
Well, you know, that the Banana for Peace program tried that, I think. And I don't know what happened to them. Their website's not up anymore.
it's defunct, but like we can always hope for change from the new administration, that maybe they will start to use a sort of
banana nut bomb.
Yeah, precisely, or some sort of food multiple entry vehicle.
You know? Peace fruit.
Peace fruit. And that would be really wonderful. We have our second caller calling.
Let's tap into that.
Marhaba, caller two.
Hey. I heard about you guys. They were talking about you on another radio station.
That's wonderful. Thank you for joining our group exploration.
I love to explore.
Well, yes, we love to explore as well. Caller 2, can you weigh in on this fruit missile program that we are promoting?
Well, I'd just like to say welcome, Explorer. And yes, there's much to weigh in on fruit and spirituality and the way the chakras can be used for expanding consciousness alone and together.
I'm more of a chocolate guy myself.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's actually very very practical, because the fruit to weight ratio of chocolate, I believe, is very large.
If chocolate comes from a tree, does that make it a spice?
Well, I'm not a botanist, but maybe.
So I wonder, because these guys heard about you, have you ever heard about these guys over there at Cafe of Shame on 90.3?
No.
They're on Sunday night from 10 to midnight, and they just thought the world of you.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, that's nice that we get some exposure. And,
Music for a Human Being is kind of like the Cafe of the Shameless.
Very well put, very well put, yes.
We are not ashamed.
No, and I don't think any of us or any of you have anything to be ashamed of. Just be yourselves and express yourselves.
Karmically.
Express yourself.
That's right. In shame and shameless, it's yin and yang.
Yeah, really, and you know, we could not exist without, you know, without that opposite being out there somewhere.
Or shame and hubris.
Hubris.
I mean, you don't call things opposite because they are X and Xlessness. You know, we say light and dark. We don't say light and lightness. I mean, lightlessness.
Lightless, yeah, but you know, but we could.
But what is the speed of dark?
That's right, exactly. And dark matter and X-light and X-dark.
Like, as in extra dark chocolate.
You know, that expanding that into the physical realm, into the realm of physics, what is X light? What is the speed of X light? What's the speed of dark matter? I think they're trying to answer those questions at the Hadron Collider.
I think that depends on how hard you throw it.
You've got to have particle accelerators.
Like the speed of sound?
A lot of magnets.
Well, yeah, the speed of... But what's really, you know...
The speed of sound, it depends on how loud you shout.
Well, yeah, callers, I think really the more relevant question for our program is, what is the speed of ignorance?
Because I notice when you shout at someone louder, they move faster.
Or what is the speed of enlightenment? I mean, that has to be related to the speed of sound.
Ah.
But,
well, here in the United States, it's particularly slow.
Amen, bro.
Ah.
Just as sound travels at different speeds in different media.
Have you ever done a death meditation?
A death meditation?
Yeah.
You mean the Native American practice of focusing on your death and meditating upon it daily?
I don't know about natives, but... Oh, hey, on Thanksgiving Day on WZBC, there's going to be that powwow show playing all kinds of stuff about Native Americans and music by Native Americans. Just had to say.
Well, that's very nice.
90.3 ZBC, sister station. They're always big up in NPR.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, unfortunately, the callers seem to fade away.
I'm here.
Oh, that's wonderful. Our telephone system is somewhat spotty.
Yeah, recently the operators, I think, have been having a lot more on their hands to deal with.
I'm feeling particularly enlightened. Lighter weight, as in the, I still feel a rush. My wife says something here.
No, I'm going to go get you a lime now.
She's going to get me a lime. She knows how to balance my chakras, and I'm not sure where she's going to put the lime.
Well, that's good, though. That's taking the advice of the other caller and really putting it into effect there.
There's always good advice on Music for Human Beings. It's incredibly practical, too. For my spiritual disciplines.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I really find that I learn so much every time we do a show. The idea of using limes and shaving the hips is it's really, really wonderful and very innovative.
And it's the opportunity for all of us to come together in this forum, connecting the nodal points of those circles and approximating a new line.
That's right. That's a very right on perspective. New connections. Sometimes I think if we could duct tape all our chakras together in group meditation.
Yeah, wouldn't that be so wonderful?
Yes. Yes, and just share energy.
But you could color code them because your dust really comes in colors.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. Though it might be good to repeat it for our listeners.
I was going to say that you could use the color coded duct tape too, and then you can coordinate it with the chakra colors. That'll give you a real big bang if you color coordinate it. You know,
yeah, it's
like
brilliant.
The chakra would have the red duct tape and. You know, then the yellow and the orange, and then on up through the your. Oh, it's just amazing when you use the color coded instead of just the basic gray.
Yeah, and there is an old saying that if we all pull together in the same direction karmically and spiritually, the entire spiritual world would keel over.
Really?
Wow!
Wow!
And it's a
wow.
great image just of how powerful our combined efforts can be.
Right.
Wow.
And how we might be able to achieve that through, as was just mentioned, color-coded duct tape.
Wow. I'm kind of having a no-wow experience. It's just...
No, those are fair expressions and feelings to be feeling.
My mind is just kind of, it's like a rainbow kaleidoscope of possibilities and light and sound and
no,
music.
That's the lime, honey. That's what the lime is doing.
Oh, okay.
That's the lime.
That's the lime?
Yeah. I used white duct tape on the lime.
White duct tape?
Yeah.
Well, I still feel good.
Callers, thank you so much for your contribution and patronage tonight.
Well, thank
wonderful
you.
Wonderful show. Wonderful. Just fabulous.
Thank
I love
you.
It.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much. I'm just in another wonderful space now.
And hopefully we'll join you again there next week.
Appreciate it.
Ma'asalam.
As-salam.
And of course, thank you to my co-hosts today, Lester and Poe.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, gentlemen. I am Dr. Jalis Sakran, broadcasting from 88.1 WMBR in Cambridge, New Age Talk Radio every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Night Owl. Ma'a salama.
For safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.